Crouch, bind, set.
Joe presents the House of Rugby, together with Guinness.
Hello and welcome to the House of Rugby, brought to you by Joe, together with our very good friends at Guinness. It's lovely to be back in our warm, cosy studio. It's lovely to be back, some might say, without the Hask. It's much more relaxed leading into this week's show, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like a church.
It's a great pleasure to have with us the boss. How are you, Jerry?
Good, yeah. Thanks.
Irish eyes are smiling.
After the weekend there, yeah.
We've got quite an interesting dynamic between the two of you. You're locked and loaded and ready to go.
I'm very balanced.
You're very balanced. My name is Alex Payne, and we've got a lot to talk about. I think we're actually going to get into some proper World Cup chat this week, which is a great treat, actually.
Which I think is good, because the first weekend deserves our attention.
Yeah, and actually it's been quite an electric start to the tournament. Are you impressed with it, by how quickly it's picked up? It's gone on the B of bang, so to speak?
I think the way the results have fallen for England, Ireland, Scotland, not for Scotland, for England, for Ireland, for the Welsh, it's sort of fed it like a,
yeah.
The lads I was chatting to on the TV were just saying, listen, if Ireland had lost that game to Scotland, the deflation and all the buzz from the World Cup would just have gone from the country. So.
Yeah. Are they back on the horse now, properly trotting in the right direction, cantering?
Before Mike jumps in, look, I thought they played really well. I thought Scotland were septic. Thought they were really, really poor. But it's the fact that...
Never heard anyone describe it. So yeah, I like that as an expression.
Not how someone performed as septic. No, I've heard septic before.
Yeah.
But I thought that... I thought Ireland were really, really good. There was like going in ranked number one into a World Cup after beating Wales back-to-back, who were the Grand Slam champions. Mm. But then you think, oh, well, 3 games ago, we got absolutely pumped by England. So there's that question mark, that niggle was there. And I suppose it's particularly on our set piece, things like that, you know. So I think they answered a lot of that. But I thought Scotland were really poor. But you have to give credit to Ireland. Like, there is pressure there, and they delivered on the day.
Already, I think we have more rugby sense than in most of this second series put together. Nice to have you on board. If you didn't know, Hask is on holiday this week. He's in the Maldives commentating from a hammock.
Yeah, can you imagine how he's just ruining everyone's rugby game? Yeah. Having him commentating
people
over the top.
People paid to go on holiday with him to listen to his insight from his hammock, sipping from his coconut. We actually thought he was here this week. Well, producer Si thought he was here this week. And so popped into the WhatsApp, usual time, fellas. At which point Hask said, no, I'm in the Maldives.
Just
follow me on Instagram.
Check
which is
my
obviously
Instagram.
The way
you'll
that these things work.
I thought I heard him say that on one of the shows that he was going doing that.
Well, I think we knew he was going. I'm just not sure anyone knew when. But we are missing. He was good last week, though, wasn't he?
He was good.
You've got to stand well back, certainly in the live environment. What are we going to talk about on this week's show? We're going to reflect, obviously, on the opening round of the World Cup. We're going to look at the progression of the home nations or not. We've touched on that briefly already. And we're going to discuss the standard of refereeing so far as well. But just a word from you on the tournament overall. Have you been impressed by how Japan has opened its doors?
Yeah, I think the atmosphere in every game and how enthusiastic they seem to have got behind every game. The atmosphere always sounds good at all the games.
Yeah.
It's been tight ones. I think there was a lot of nerves for Japan in that first game. I think you would have expected them to go on and win that a bit more of a canter than they did, but a lot of pressure for them to come into that World Cup, because if they'd have lost that first game, just imagine how much energy that would have deflated out of it. So I think then having the Kiwi All Blacks game sort of set it off properly.
Kiwi South Africa.
And then what did I say?
Kiwi All Blacks.
Oh, nice.
But good game, I'd like to watch that.
Well, they probably have a good team. Yeah. And then, obviously, I thought the France-Argentina game was a quality game as well. So some of the home nations haven't started so well. Scotland didn't start. Actually, I don't think Scotland had got off the plane yet. Was that the B team? I'm not entirely sure. And then England didn't really play very well either, but we'll get into that.
Did England not play very well, or was it just Eddie Jones seemed pretty relaxed off the back of it, as did Owen Farrell. Take the 5 points, move on. You don't want to be...
Well, no, that's how you've got to look at it. But then behind closed doors, I think you'd be going, hang on, you're a professional outfit, you dropped 14 balls or whatever.
Yeah. Well, 03,
We had Georgia
first. Georgia first, actually, you did.
Which we did 87.
Yeah, all right.
And then we beat South Africa.
Tick.
And then we had...
Samoa and Uruguay.
Uruguay first and Samoa.
So actually, your campaign actually went the other way, because you started well, and your final pool game, you struggled massively to get past Samoa.
Yeah. But then we sort of battled all the way in, didn't we, really? We didn't play great rugby.
Still came home with the trophy. As a coach, do you see what Eddie Jones' point is, or would you have been quite frustrated off the back of that?
You have to be realistic. I think they came through it. I don't think any major injuries. They got their bonus point win. They got through it. They made hard work of it by going front door against Tonga all the time, which I thought was you know, I understand that you've got to get guys to respect the runners to start with, but after a while you're like, okay, fuck.
I spoke to someone in the camp and they said that the first 20 minutes that their sort of game plan was to put the ball behind Tonga and not give them any free shots, not to try and energise them. I was like, well, did you not realise after 20 to stop doing it for the whole thing where you just keep kicking the ball away?
Yeah.
Because if they played phases against them, they'd have tired them out and they'd have actually opened them up even more, but they just didn't play anything. And then I thought, well, maybe they're holding everything back. They don't want to show anything because they didn't go wide once on a strike play. No. After causing Ireland so many problems going wide, they didn't go wide once. I was just like, maybe they just don't want to give France and Argentina any video footage to go through. But I was like, what's the point of doing that? You can't do that.
Have you sent teams out before with a directive not to show any cards?
We've had plays that we said, we'll use this play. And then if we're comfortable, we just say, don't use that play. Let's keep that one in the bank. But we'd never go out and say, let's play a bit shit.
Let's play boring. So yeah,
people think we're not great.
Yeah, you just can't do that, I don't think.
I agree with you in that. Like, if they just... I'd watch Tonga and the All Blacks, and I was like, these Tongan players look like they're amateurs, man.
Yeah.
And I thought...
Well, they found some guy on Facebook. Yeah, that hooker.
That was funny.
The young guy.
Yeah.
That came on for the replacement hooker. Yeah. The coach had never even seen him play.
He's not even in the NPC or New Zealand Cup, whatever it is now.
The way they worked it, I understand you got to play front door a little bit at the start to get sick guys down. But after that, you're like, okay, well, let's start shifting the point of contact a little bit.
Yeah.
And it's like, I thought it would be like, you know, when you see the lads talk about rugby league, say for the first 15 minutes, don't give them something to hit. So it's just all short passes and not like lining somebody up because everyone's energized. That's exactly what it was. But I couldn't believe how well they dealt with Billy Vunipola.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Like, nobody else can deal with it.
No one's done that. And
nobody. When I look back on the Ireland-England game, the majority of tries all came from people having to tighten up and go, oh, shit, watch for Vunipola here because it's going to take two to stop him. And then they just went, we'll just move out to the edge.
What are these first games like? What was in 07, what was that Ireland? It wasn't Georgia.
Namibia.
It was Namibia. Well, I just wonder what those first games are like. All that prep, all that excitement. For England, they've had to wait a couple of days to get going off the back of the opening of the tournament. Is that a factor, or is it just something that we're sort of talking about here and now?
Our 2007 campaign was so poor that I don't think you can... It's hard to reference anything from it and say that this is... We were rubbish. We were really underprepared in terms of our rugby. I think maybe we just... That Croke Park game... When we play G, I think Eddie just wanted to freeze that team and that performance and say, if I can just take this and bring it to the World Cup, it's going to work for me. And it's just too dynamic. We just focused on conditioning and getting as fit as we could. And we went out and we were massive. We underperformed in our warm-up games.
Yeah. Did you know going into that World Cup that you wouldn't know anywhere near where you needed to be, or is it only in the tournament where those kind of things get exposed?
I think it was in the tournament.
Really?
Yeah, because we kind of went, we only played two warm-up games. Played Scotland.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember now. I think we played Scotland, we played Italy, and we just about beat them in the end. I think Rog scored a try.
Didn't you have a game down in France where Dricko got...
Yeah, we played. Then someone had the idea that let's play a Bayonne club side. And they were like, we were going, we were training in the south of France. We were doing lots of skill work. And I said, this is really nice. I said, oh, we've got a game. And we went in and I was like, why are all the people trying to spit at us? I said, it's like they hate us. And there was some Saffer just came in and just leveled Dricko.
Yeah.
And I think Dricko had gone to the referee and said, if you don't sort this out, man, it's going to turn into chaos. And they were just taking free shots. It was like one of those, you know, watch those Lions games where there's a touring club side and they play against them and they just say, I'm going to fucking maim someone here.
Yeah.
That's kind of what it was. But we genuinely didn't know where we were at till we played Namibia in the first game and we like made hard work of it and then should have lost to Georgia.
Yeah.
And then we were like, oh no. And then
France, Argentina.
Peter Stringer, who'd like never been dropped in his whole life, strings got dropped and we're like, oh, what's going on now? You know, so it was like a panic button. Like,
yeah.
And, tournament just fell apart for us.
What about your experience of where England are now, getting up and running?
I was just trying to think of, I don't think I ever thought about it in terms of waiting to go into that first game in 2011 or in 2003. I didn't really just got on with it, really. Yeah. I don't think it really sat on my brain about we're about to go into the biggest competition ever. I don't think it really thought like that. You just sort of trust in your processes and trust in the guys around you and just go and do it. Obviously, we played Argentina in the first game of that in 2011, right. And again, probably didn't really perform, but it was that Argentina side that just defended for Britain and were hard to break down, unless you were the All Blacks and they smashed them. But you want to have a good performance to set your momentum. So that's the only thing that England didn't really get. Yes, they can brush it under the carpet and go, well, we got our bonus point, we've got that win. Yes, we didn't perform. I don't think they'll overanalyze it, because I don't think you'll ever drop 13 balls again or whatever they drop. But you've just got to sort of roll with the punches, and you can't really dwell because you don't have time. You have to move on. So,
what were the other pluses for England? Manu,
obviously.
I thought the back three were good.
Getting Slade back on the field.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that he's going to make this World Cup. I don't think he'll stay. He looked absolutely crippled.
Yeah, his knee looked knackered. Yeah. But if he was fit, would you go with Ford and Farrell?
I would go Farrell, Slade, and have Slade at 12, though, if he's fully fit. But he looked like he was battling with his knee.
Yeah. Mm.
I know he got...
Which he did. He did in training at Penny Hill a couple of months ago.
Yeah.
Manu, obviously, bat three, you liked. Set piece. I tell you the other thing I want to ask you about is, and credit to where credit's due, Steve Borthwick, England's defensive line-out is beginning. Obviously, they had a field day against Ireland and then that World Cup warm-up, and against Italy and Newcastle. But England's defensive line-out is picking up more and more opposition ball. Is that a trend you're spotting, or is that...
I'm looking at it from the Irish point of view.
Yeah.
So, like, I just know that, like, during the Six Nations, you're always going to prioritise your own ball.
Yeah.
So as you're layering it in, you'll train your own ball and then you'll bring in systems for contesting. So you're either going to contest, you're going to man watch, in which case you want to have guys who are pretty good at jumpers all the way through, or else you might go with a system, which if you watch how the Springboks are defending, they're cutting off the middle and the back.
Yeah.
So they're giving you the front, and if you go there, they might try and contest it, but they're going to go with two pods of three, cutting off the middle and the back. And
just to feed their line speed in defence, really.
Exactly. And if you watch, I'll go back. So the point, what I'd seen from the Irish point of view is when they played against England, they were trying the 50-50 balls into the middle and back, and Atoje was just picking it off, because when you're throwing to the back, he can start, say, if you divide the 10 metres that you have in the line into five zones, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 being the 15, he was starting in around zone 4, and when they tried to pick off the ball to zone 5, he's so quick on the ground and so quick to get in the air, he was picking them off, and they were throwing 50-50s. And you just need to prioritise winning the ball.
Yeah.
And Ireland weren't doing that. And then that's what... They got no set-piece launch against England. And looked at... Everything was bad against England that day. But yeah, the English contesting lineout is pretty strong. And then conversely then, when you looked at Ireland at the weekend, they secured their own ball and they got massive momentum off it. The Scottish launches off their set-piece was terrible, man. Winning the ball at the front.
Terrible.
Greg Laidlaw has to throw a 16-metre pass. And while that ball is in the air, all the Irish backline are shooting up. There's no animation. All they want to do is get Stuart Hogg and try and get him a one-on-one out in the 15-metre channel. But by the time Stuart Hogg gets the ball, Gary Ringrose has shut him down because they've taken the ball off the front. So if you're going to take the ball off the front... You know, if that's where the space is and you have to win the ball there, but you've got to play another phase before you've got to figure
it
out.
Yeah. Whether you drive it and then get everyone sucked in, or whether you do something where you can peel it, or you can do something, or you can just drop a forward pod off and then absorb that back pod and the defence.
If you are Scotland now, we'll come on to Ireland. If you are Scotland now, how big a hole are you in?
Well, you're in a big hole because...
Hamish Watson gone. Gone.
You've lost two players. You've probably lost your best, well, apart from Hoggy, probably Finn Russell, your best player forward. Obviously, then you've lost Ali Price as well. Who's come out of that?
Henry Purgos.
Who's not a bad player, to be fair. But everything went wrong. So it's quite an easy one to brush under the carpet. But there's things you go into playing Ireland. And for that Irish team, it was the perfect game for them. Scotland played in the wrong areas. So they got territory easy.
Mm.
They gave penalties away in the wrong areas, which is what Ireland wants, to get their very set-piece dominated. So suddenly you're giving them set-piece within 30 metres out from their line. You ain't getting the ball back.
Mm.
Ireland are a possession-based team. They'll use their forwards, all the way through. And four tries for forwards, was it? I think.
One for Conway. Three for forwards, one for Conway.
So that's the perfect game for them. And it was just naivety by Scotland, just playing completely in the wrong areas. Mm. But and then Finn Russell becomes his own worst enemy, because then he tries to do something spectacular to get you out of it, and he'll make another mistake, and you just end up compounding mistakes.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think they're just going to have to go, look, can't dwell on those performances. They've got to go, right, we've just got to get back on the horse and win the next game. Just let's put that aside.
Easier said than done, though.
Well, it is, because obviously your confidence is going to take a massive hit, isn't it?
So what does Gregor do?
I'm not sure. He's. I think they need to simplify things a little bit. Some of their plays, they played, you know, when Conway had the kick through and the foot race with Hogg.
Mm.
I think that was like a three pass play where they won the ball in the middle of the line out. They didn't actually get any momentum, so all the Irish defenders were still ready to sprint forward. Then McNally breaks across, plays the nine, who then goes to try and play the 10. And all, like, where you're trying these little passes, all the Irish defenders are shooting forward. Chris Farrell comes up, pressures their skill set, the ball drops, and they go from a line out inside the Irish 22 to defending a scrum 5 metres out. They need to simplify things. Yeah. There was some stuff I just didn't understand. Like, when they lost Hamish Watson, they brought their sub hooker on. They brought Fraser Brown on and put him. And they played Thompson, who I thought played really well for them in the World Cup warm-ups.
Yeah.
He's a really good player. They just, what they lack is... It's easy to say a Billy Vunipola, but they lack someone that you can just be real simple and just say, here, boom, get us some front football and we'll go from there. Because all their plays are quite intricate, and they have some brilliant players. I think that the replacement nine, George Horn, is phenomenal. Ali Price is class. Mm. I just don't think he's performed for them internationally. Yeah. And I think they use Laidlaw to kind of...
The problem is that you've got a genuine Scottish team that's picked to play rugby. They want to play quite loose, quite fast. Is Greg the right person to do that for them? If he's going to be firing 16 minutes, it's not the fastest of passers. Mm. He's not the quickest away from the base. But yet, he'll control the game for you. But then, are you stuck between what your identity is with Finn Russell at 10, Hoggy at 15? Your pack is quite lightweight to move around the field. But then, is your nine controlling it from... I don't know. My question is, you'd be better with a quicker distributor getting the ball up and away. That way, you hopefully, if you can get quick ball off fast phases, you're negating that line speed that's naturally coming at you. But, you know, you look at how New Zealand figured it out against South Africa.
Yeah.
South Africa's line speed is just insane. But they just were quite happy to play into it to figure it out. And when they did, it was simple for them.
Wales, tick the box or double tick?
I think they double ticked. I think the only thing that's... is that they scored four first half tries all off structured play and they used Gareth Davies really, really well there. But they, when they play Australia, I can't, those tier one teams won't give you that kind of easy ins off structured play. So second half, they're unstructured. They scored two unstructured tries in the second half, which is how they probably will beat Australia if they do beat Australia. But they, I think, look, they did the job on Georgia, but... their work rate at times was, they just need to work harder. I think Australia are going to play to the edge all the time. They're going to try and move the ball to the edge. Fiji targeted the wide breakdowns against Australia, and they got great returns from it. And I think with George North, with Josh Adams, with Liam Williams, John Davies, they're all real powerful. They can win those collisions and they'll target those. And that's when it's the turnover ball. That's why the All Blacks are better than anyone else, because just the skill set on... They don't need structure. They don't need anything. If the game, if their line out is going to shit, they can still rip you apart if you just have a sloppy kick.
Mm.
That's the difference. So I thought Wales played well, but I would have preferred if it was all unstructured stuff. You said, like, this is going to translate when they go against the bigger teams.
Yeah. Tick and a half for me, because those
B+.
Yeah, those first set piece tries that they got, they're never going to get that against a decent team. George's defence was just... all over the shop.
Were you disappointed by Georgia, given the Six Nations talk?
Where you'd say you would be disappointed is when someone's done a line-out move one time against you, and it's gone 10 back inside to the blindside winger, and you've left your prop at the back, and he's been exposed. You'd think, well, okay, we won't leave our prop at the back. We might change that around so we can fill that gap, or you go half in. So you get your 10 to mark opposite, or you do something. You don't just leave it exactly the same and they do exactly the same move and this time he goes through and scores. Their defence, how they set up, Georgia was all over the place. But then you still have to go through and you have to complete it and you have to pull off the move, and which Wales did well. And I thought they looked competent in everything that they were doing. But I still think it was a bit easy for them.
What about their attack? Obviously, I mean, of all the build-ups... going to lose your attack coach on the eve of the tournament.
The criticism is that they weren't scoring tries when Rob Holy was there. Then he was gone. And now it's they scored a heap of tries.
So. Hence the question, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. That's the thing, is I think with Stephen Jones coming in, you're going to get set piece strikes a fair bit better of Ten, who's probably been around.
How quickly can you instigate that?
I mean, well, strikes is easy. You're doing, whilst the forwards are actually beating the crap out of each other, we'll run 10 strikes or whatever. You pick your ones, you'll have a playbook. Well, you might have a playbook of things that you would do and against certain defences, and you start pulling out the ones you want to try. But I think they won't have necessarily looked at the Georgia and gone, well, what's going to work against their defence? They'll go, right, what do we probably want to use going forward?
Yeah.
Obviously, having someone like Gareth Davis who runs so well off at nine, you want to use that from a left-handed scrum. You've got to, because it's one of his major strengths. So, and then obviously having Jonathan Davis and Hadley Parks, who are power runners, it gives you a lot of options. Him going across, those two going straight, you'll have your 10 out the back. So let's work on that. And that's something that Jonesy would have probably put in straight away, but as you said with Jerry, you know, the work they have literally had the worst attack in the Six Nations, yet they won a Grand Slam. Well done. But that's nothing, well, maybe a little bit, but Italy scored the same amount of tries than you. They needed something different, so it could be the best thing that's ever happened to them,
which is extraordinary. 12 years you have Rob Howley as your attack coach, and then you go into the tournament where the hopes are at their highest, swap him out, bring in Steve, sort of devalues them. Point of a coach, doesn't it? You can just interchange like that.
The Scarlets have been running those plays, all those lineup moves, like the rip back. You know, it's like Mike said, it's not rocket science to do them. It's just they generally they won't be as effective against good D.
Yeah.
It's just that if you're playing against Gareth Davies and you give a team gives you back ball against him, and then he gets the ball there, he's only got to take 3-4 steps. He's already got outside your tail gunner. He's got to your 10. 10's hips have turned in and everyone's going, oh shit. And then he can just pick off whoever he wants.
Yeah.
Poor D.
It was atrocious D.
Okay. I want to ask you one more question about Billy V, just as one of the sort of standout moments. It's not often you see him get put on his backside like that. Is that something that the team will just wince and move quietly on, or will there someone like a Marler just be whispering in the ear?
I'm sure he'll get some stick about it, but no one will really, well actually unless they're trying to fire him up for the next game, but you'd be just like, are you all right, really? We actually need you.
Take that next week.
Okay, don't do that again, just get rid of it, I'll take it in. Yeah, but he's getting enough game time recently, isn't
have
he?
You so ever been cleaned out in an incident like that?
No,
we talked about it the other day.
To Brian Lima,
you
the chiropractor remember. Ended me. Yeah, but you get ended every now and again. It's good for the soul, I think.
Good for your health insurance.
He might do a bit more footwork this week.
Yeah. Can you remember going up against someone and thinking, I'm not sure I need too much more of that in my life?
I got maimed by Jason White there a few years ago.
Did you?
Yeah. Eddie O'Sullivan was our coach with the national team at the time. And he used to have this thing about round the corner, because we used to play real simple with Munster because our pack was always pretty strong. So we used to go round the corner off strings. He's put up a chart and he kind of go, you can't just keep going around the corner like this because you'll get killed. And I was like, we're not going to get killed, man. We kill these guys at club level all the time. And then we got the ball against Scotland. I remember I came around the corner and whatever line I took, Jason White was just running full pelt. And as I went to catch the ball, he hit me. And honestly, man, maimed me. I was lying on the ground like this, and I could hear someone Scottish shouting, he was still alive. And,
got to take him.
Took my soul.
Yeah. Took your soul.
Get up.
To be fair, Billy V got up with a big smile.
Yeah.
He loves a bit of that. I'm sure we'll see a few more of those before the tournament is done.
Technically, was that a high shot?
You tell me, no arms, that one.
Yeah.
Should we come on to that in a moment? Hold that thought. Just while you do that, we've got a few other bits, obviously, to get stuck into. We're also going to talk about refereeing as well. But you are watching and listening to House of Rugby, brought to you by Joe, together with our very good friends at Guinness. With me, Alex Payne, alongside Mike Tindall and Jerry Flannery. Good to have you both with us. Still to come, we're going to talk a bit about the Southern Hemisphere sides. But between now and then, if you haven't already been listening or watching Liquid Football, where on earth have you been?
Who wore the most outrageous clothes of anyone that you played with?
I'd have to say Mario Balotelli.
Yeah, Balotelli definitely wear anything.
I can't remember his kind of most extreme looks. I just remember the Why Always Me t-shirt and the bib that he struggled with. I sort of remember on field fashion stuff.
It was more like just name brand, but just different name brands, just all like put together. Yeah. Like if it was fresh Loud. And brand new, he would have it.
And he'd just tell everyone how beautiful he is.
Yeah, all the time.
Why come in and tell you how good he looked?
Yeah, yeah. Tell everyone he'd stand. Yeah. You'd be on a plane. You go, look how pretty I am, everyone. Just like, oh my god,
crazy.
Him and Mika used to argue about all it. Actually, time. I remember
about
him and Mika
what?
Richard, who was prettier. Yeah, seriously.
Did he get everyone else involved in that?
But you used to get everyone involved, you didn't care. It's crazy.
That is Liquid Football with the fabulous Kelly Cates every Monday here on Joe, and you can subscribe now via iTunes or watch it on YouTube. Do get stuck in. We had Wayne Bridge with us last week at a live show. Yeah. Very nice guy. Quite a big rugby fan as well. Yeah. Big fan of yours and Hask. How was your live show last week?
It was good.
Where were you?
We were in the Guinness Open Gate Brewery.
Lovely venue.
Yeah, it was good.
We had Greg along. Is he now Love Islander who plays a bit of rugby, or is he a rugby player who went on Love Island?
He's pretty much trying to stay in his lane. He's full-time training with the Sevens now, trying to go to the World Cup.
He must be taking a fearful amount of shit at the same time, isn't he?
I think he's just...
Probably gets away with it, Sevens, a bit more than 50s.
Yeah, probably.
We asked him about it on the show. We just said, listen, so how did it work out for you, Sevens-wise? He said, look, well, they contacted him through Instagram. And they just said, listen, would you like to come on the show? So we said, I approached, I think Anthony Eddy is the Sevens coach. And he just said, listen, I'd like to go on Love Island. He goes, absolutely not. And he went, oh, okay. And went back. And then said, went back into training and they played some tournament in France. And then he said, eventually they got back to him again on Instagram. And they said, listen, we'd love to have you on the show. And he said, well, our tournament's finished now, but you'd have to fly me directly from France. And then he said, okay. So he was able to go in this time. I think they try and keep put people in seclusion.
Yeah, that's right.
There was one guy who was in a hotel on his own with a chaperone with no phone for 3 weeks. This guy's gone kind of spare.
Oh my God.
But Greg only had to do one day and then went in. And he said when he got in, then they're all like covering their mics and they're like, how many followers have I got? And then like, is it Tommy Fury? Tommy Fury was like, did my brother win his fight? And he was like, yeah. And then he said the producers found out and they were giving Greg shit over it. But he's a very normal guy. He said, look, I went on a holiday for two weeks and I came out and suddenly my life is completely different.
25 G's in the back pocket.
Yeah. And whatever else he's going to pick up endorsement-wise. Yeah. But he's still got his head. I've got my law exams and I want to try and get to the World Cup. And then the lads are like, you're not going to do your law exams.
Well, boy. That is obviously Baz and Andrews. Why haven't you got your name on that yet?
I'm not part of the package.
Baz and Andrew and Jerry. Sort of turning into Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventures. Yeah.
Jerry likes to just sit above and look down.
Yeah, exactly.
Play with people like pawns. Not
you can give it the Emperor's thumb. Yeah. You know? Yes or no.
You have a completely skewed conception.
We're building it up. I like to build up profiles. Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby. Do have a little visit of that if you would like.
When I was leaving the live venue, Wayne Bridge's mates were literally trying to force him to bully him to go out. I was like, why aren't you going out? And he's like, will you fuck off?
Really?
I was trying to get away from his mates. Mates are like, you're not going. We'll just get another one. And he was like, no, I'm going. And they're like, no, you're not. I was like,
rough ride. We had some quite good interaction on the Facebook page this week, actually, off the back of our very enjoyable live show. Merchandise is available. Have you seen our merch?
No.
I should have bought you a signed T-shirt, actually.
Yeah, I think Jerry's definitely serious.
Use that to clean the windscreen on the way home.
He's definitely a serious operator.
Yeah, definitely a serious operator. Not a man who would microwave his marinara. Yeah. Back to the rugby. Actually, very quickly, can I just say one thing? I dipped below the line this week. We have a saying on this, never go below the line, in terms of reviews and the Facebook comments and things like that. We went to have a look at some of the comments this week. You're not meant to laugh about trolls and getting trolled, but we've got a new troll.
Have we?
Yeah. We obviously had Mabrice in Series 1, who got a little feisty, invited on the show, and then she said, no, that's it, I've had enough, and left. We've got a new one, and I'm not joking when I say that his name is Clegg Smegson.
Clegg?
I don't know what we've done to annoy Clegg, but Clegg is very, very displeased with us.
I have a feeling I know why Clegg is mad at the world already.
I'm sad that Clegg doesn't like what we do.
The spirit of Hask, shut up, you virgin.
I think Clegg needs his own T-shirt. And, you know, we can all fall in behind.
What is it,
Clegg Smegson.
Smegson.
Don't laugh, it's not funny.
Not at all, mate.
Clegg, as always, you are very welcome on the House of Rugby. Come and vent at us, with us, enjoy a pint, and, you know, just relax.
Your opinion's valued, no do one.
Back to the Ruggers. I hope Clegg will come back double barrel this week. All Blacks. There's to lose.
I wasn't 100% convinced. I thought it wasn't a great Springbok performance. I thought the first half, I thought their attack was really, really poor. Everyone focuses so hard on the line speed that they bring and the pressure that they bring on in their pressure game, which I thought was pretty effective. But it's just that they didn't apply anything on the other side of it when they had the ball. And then eventually the South African wingers are coming in so far because they're so athletic that they can generally get back out if there's a pass. But when the kick pass goes in, it's difficult to recover from that. And the All Blacks were clinical. But I don't think it's a done deal yet. You know, I think that the box should get better.
Yeah.
Their attack can't be as bad as it was in the first half.
No.
For the rest of the tournament, they can build into it.
I've said from the start, I think South Africa's been overrated just from the Rugby Championships. I don't feel that New Zealand or Argentina threw their best efforts at it. And I don't think the South African attack is that great. It's still hidden behind brutal force. Now, if you run over the top of people, you can make it happen. But just having watched the first half again just then, New Zealand just toying with them. Like, they were quite happy for them to have the ball because they believed they wouldn't... They never get what...
Just toying with them? Genuinely?
Well, I just when I watched it back then, I just thought they were quite happy to defend them. And then they were playing from everywhere and they weren't worried about not keeping the ball. You think, oh my God, it looks frantic and it looks messy, but they kept doing it. And then they sort of figured out how to get their attack going, obviously with the kick pass and then the amazing finish that went. But then the second try where they were waiting for them to fly out the line. Beauden Barrett was so off to throw a dummy, get behind him, and then he was an offload over the top there through the back. That is the downside. If you fly up that fast and someone can throw a dummy and get a half shoulder, if everyone floods the channel, you're buggered. Because they literally don't really fly up as a flat line and then stop as someone goes into tackle. They keep going past. So then you are literally exposed and
stuffed.
And those two ones, they did get exposed. Now, whether they can get better, I haven't seen that much of their attack that I think is world-changing if you can front up on their forward pack.
I agree with you in terms of they're predictable. And it's brute force. It's still not easy. But You said about the Argentina. I thought the Argentinians were average, man.
Yeah, in the Rugby Championship. I keep calling it Four Nations. In the Rugby Championship, yeah, they were average too.
Even against France. Well, in the France game, all they had, like when I say all they had is probably, like you're comparing it to winning a World Cup. So if you're talking about winning a World Cup, you compare it to what New Zealand have, and that's the standard. And I think when you watch the All Black forwards carry the ball, they take the ball moving forward.
Yeah.
They don't take the ball static. Because if I take the ball static and then I go to pass, everyone's just shifting straight away. If I take the ball, if it's a run, catch, run, or run, catch, pass, most of the other teams don't have that ability. I would have seen a lot of similarities in the English team with the box. Not so much that they're just so focused on the kicking game, but if you watch, the spine of the English team is pretty much the Saris team. It's Jamie George, it's Itoje, it's Billy Vonopola, it's Owen Farrell, it's Elliot Daly. Yeah, I know he's only gone there.
He played well when he came on, so George Cruz will probably start.
I've been watching the Rising Suns, is it?
Oh, yeah.
I've been watching that, and I just see how much ball work that the English players are doing, and I can see that their offloading skills are massively improving. Like, it's small things like someone like Ellis Genge carrying the ball into contact. He doesn't have to get an offload where he beats the guy and get his hands free on the far side, like Sonny Bill Williams with long levers. But he wins the collision, buys him a second. The whole defensive line will come up, and then he just keeps it alive. That's where I see the difference. That's where I think England could be contenders. But I think the box have more in them. I agree with you that their go-to is always going to be, I'm going to run over you and you've got to defend it. But
Maybe it's just the fact that I want to see Colby with his hands in the ball more and Bepe with his hands in the ball more. But Willie LaRue didn't really get into like he normally does. If Willie LaRue's getting his hands on that ball 10, 15 times in a first receiver sort of playmaker role, then that's when they play their best. But he didn't do that on the weekend. I wouldn't say that Pollard was amazing either. And then Faf de Klerk was... He kept kicking the ball away, which is when you Faf de Klerk don't kick the ball away, you just run.
From a layman's point of view, it must be so demoralising to dominate territory possession, feel you're getting on top in a game like that and go from 3-0 up to 17-3 down without having sort of had the chance.
It was
to
a weird one because with the territory and possession, it was all given to them. They didn't really make a line break to get them there. It wasn't great attack that got them there. It was pressure from the defence, a couple of charge downs. New Zealand playing, like, just throwing the ball, like, completely. So I'm not sure whether... I mean, I'm on a group with literally 200 South Africans just saying for the last 2 months how they're going to win the World Cup, and I'm just
gone a bit quiet.
No, all they're doing now is blaming referees.
Right.
I've never seen so many whinging Saffas blaming referees. But
I want to come on to us, Razzie.
Hmm.
Did you learn a lot from him? Did you enjoy working with him?
Yeah. For Munster, he was amazing.
Yeah.
And for me personally, I learned, if Razzie called me in the morning and said, we've got to get rid of a body, I'd be like, okay, let's go, let's get rid of it.
Wow. How many times did you make
that? Yeah, how many, exactly. We've gone there before with one or two other Irish coaches, haven't we?
Yeah. But he was incredible. He was incredible when he came into Munster, because we were absolutely in the shit when he came in, and it was a really difficult dynamic to parachute him in.
Yeah.
As a director of rugby with access to this head coach, even though that was the strategic plan, but they just accelerated it a year, and it wasn't handled very well. And I thought that was the first thing that kind of won me over at Razzie, because I was looking to leave Munster when I knew this was happening, because I said, Axel was the guy that I looked up to all my career, and he was the captain when I played. He got me into coaching. You know, I could just see that there would be friction between the two of them. And I said, if there is going to be friction, I said, I'm going to have to fall. Even though I think that Munster are going to side with Razzie, the guy they've just brought in, I said, I've got to side with Axel. So I didn't want to be part of that.
Yeah.
Then I met Razzie, and Axel met Razzie. And then they kind of, and Razzie just said, listen, he said, if it's me, I'll go. If it's you, you'll go. If it's Axel, he'll go. He said, but we've got to make it work together. And I spoke to Axel, and Axel said, listen, he said, I think he's a really good guy. And he was. And he absolutely empowered Axel. And it was only seeing when you have somebody else in the organization doing all of the role that Axel had been dumped with.
Yeah.
You know, Axel was involved of, he was in charge of recruitment, of retention, managing the relationship with the RFU, you know, all of the things that, like, you've just gone from an assistant coach into a head coach, but you're also doing the director of rugby's job. That Razzie took a lot of that off Axel's shoulders and got him back coaching. And he just simplified everything for us. Now, I know there's a model that the South African rugby is renowned for. Razzie was probably involved with that in developing that. But he brought it in, and there's just layers that have to get added onto it, because it only takes you so far. I've seen that with Munster, that they took a group that had barely scraped into Europe, put a game plan that was a territory-based game plan that's quite pragmatic, that takes advantage of players like Conor Murray's skill set.
Mm.
And because of the Gaelic football that we play in Ireland, a lot of the players are good aerially, and they just took advantage of that. So we played a lot of our rugby in the opposition half. We didn't play much rugby here. And that gets you so far. And teams probably underestimated as well Razzie's first year. And we won more games than we'd ever won, ever. You know, he did loads for us there. And I think all the while it was like, he said, I'm not going back to South Africa. I'm not going back to South Africa. I kept saying it, like, and we said, okay, well, great, we've got Razzie. And then eventually it happened. But I think...
Did he explain why he then went back?
He said that it was his dream to coach South Africa all the time.
Yeah.
And he left because he felt that South African rugby wasn't in the right place, and that his words weren't being heeded. And as he left, the ranking just went boom, 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 boom.
That year they lost to Italy in November, didn't they?
Politically, man, there's so much stuff going on there that we wouldn't be privy to. Because you've had apartheid for so long. Yeah. Like, no one gives you a book and says, this is how you right those wrongs. They're trying their best to fix those things, but I don't know what it takes, but it takes someone special to try and get everyone on board and get them aligned. And I think South African rugby, like the South African head coach couldn't ring up a fullback in the Sharks and say, listen, I watched it the weekend. I think you need a little bit of work on your aerial game, or, you know, I think you need to step up as second receiver on the short side. He couldn't do that. He would have to contact the CEO or the head coach. That's ridiculous, you know? And Razzie, when he came over to Ireland, then he saw how the Irish system works, and the Irish system always prioritizes the national team. And he would have said, like, oh, I can't come back to South Africa because you need to make these changes. So, he got a lot of things put right for South Africa before he even came back.
Right.
And he's come in now.
They had to make changes before he would accept it, basically.
That's it, yeah. So, I had a journalist in Ireland say to me, I was doing a media day, and he said to me, he said, I didn't know whether he was trying to piss me off or what, you know, I don't know. He just
brave
said
man
to me,
if he was.
He said, like, when Razzie was lying to us for all that time saying he wasn't coming back, and I said, fuck, man. I was like, he wasn't lying to us. Like, he wasn't going to go back.
Yeah.
Like, why would you go back and take
that
head job?
That current circumstances.
It's ridiculous. And if you look at what he's done now, if they tonk at the World Cup, the fact that the head coach can now go and contact the players, the fact that all of their best players who are playing abroad are available for the national team now. Yeah. Like, the South African's rugby is in a way better position. It's just that he came in so late in the World Cup cycle that I don't know how many layers he can add to it.
Like, yes.
What Mike's criticisms of South African rugby are legit, you know, because it is predictable. It relies on just having these massive players trying to run over the top of you. But that's kind of easy enough to defend. If I know this guy's going to run at me, even if I'm 100 kgs, he's 120, I'll still throw my body in there and go,
You've got front up, but sometimes you can they can still get over the top of you. But
yeah. But when that guy's running at me and next minute he's throwing a pass out there, I can't defend that, you know? And that's the difference between, you know, having players at that higher skill set like there is in New Zealand. But you can add layers to it. You got to just spend time developing the players. It's just that Rassi and Jack Nienaber, who's the defence coach, they came into it so late that I'm not sure if they can progress things that far.
Felix Jones out there as well.
Yeah, yeah. So,
Munster full
Sijs de Bruin, Felix and myself left Munster in May. It's obviously it's weird, like, you know, when you leave. I know you coach as well. Like when you leave, things are so structured, and then you're kind of like, I'm missing that structure now. And I'd be WhatsApping Felix. I said, this feels pretty weird, man. You know, because I know the lads are back to preseason training now, and he's like, yeah, I know it does feel weird. But we just kept watching rugby, and I know Felix went around to a couple of the clubs here in England. And coaching is a really selfish job, but it's unbelievably fulfilling when you're doing it, you know.
Yeah.
Rassi had been on to Felix a few times about getting to come over, and he was staying with Munster. And then Sijs de Bruin, their attack coach, was taken ill, unfortunately. And then Felix just said, I'm going to South Africa. And I said, well, there you go. You've just gone. You're 32 years of age. You've been coaching the Munster attack for the last 3 years, the three European semi-finals. I know it's not silverware, but that's not bad. Still considering we couldn't get into Europe.
Yeah, young guy.
We've been to like a Pro 14 final. It feels a little bit hollow when I say that, because it's like I'm kind of, you're not achieving, like, but I said it, he's 32 years of age. I don't know if there's a younger attack coach in Europe. Yeah. And now he's got World Cup experience. And like, normally if someone said you want to coach the box at a World Cup, you've got to go, I've got to take my family to South Africa now for the next 4 years. What's that going to be like? Will we be alive by the time I get to the World Cup? And, you know, but he just drops straight in. So he's in the mix there now. So there's a good Munster element there between Rassi, Jacques Nienaber. Yeah. Alad Walters was the head of performance.
Yes. Lovely bloke.
In Munster. And they're kind of my second team now, you know.
Are they?
So
we'll get you a shirt, Jerry. You can...
Yeah. Well, if the box win the World Cup, we'll have an Irishman with a World Cup winner.
Yeah. Absolutely. But or is it high?
Not looking overly optimistic at the moment, but we'll see.
I'd love to talk more about Rassi Edgesample. He never did the traffic lights. Do you remember him doing the traffic light on the roof at Bloemfontein when he's had the cheetahs? Did he ever come up with mad cap ideas like that? Just for those who don't know, he had a red, an orange and a green paddle, and he went up onto the top of
he had traffic lights.
Oh, they were actually traffic lights?
Yeah, he had traffic lights. So they would have patterns. So you'd have like a red pattern, which might be like a two hit ups and then come back to the back to the blind side, or you might have a blue pattern, which is just keep going around the corner, and you might have a green pattern, which is wide, hit up once and come straight back. Yeah, but Rassi was saying like the players would be playing in the stadium, they'd look up, they'd have a line, they'd look up and they'd see red, and then they'd be like, okay, we know what the pattern is, and they'd do it, because Rassi'd be looking to see what way the defense is folding, you know, are they just keep folding around the corner. And a lot of the stuff, it seems kind of ridiculous now, but if you did that stuff back then, it just gives you such a massive advantage. And it's not like he tells me these stories to pump his own tires, but he was telling me that he said, when I played, he said, I got a laptop and like computers weren't like common back then. And he said, I figured out what to code. I kept coding games. And he said, I went to our coach at the time. He was very, very driven to win all the time. So if he felt like that can almost step over the line where you almost feel like you're stepping on the coach's toes. Yeah. But he said, listen, I've seen this thing with Australia where they keep doing this exit pattern. This is probably in 2001.
Yeah.
And they keep doing an exit pattern where Gregan comes back and he bounces back and he always throws it back here off a line out. They throw it to Langford. And he goes, okay, we'll take a gamble on it. So Rassi. And Rassi took the gamble on it in the like last minute of the game against Australia, intercepted the ball. And he says he grounded the ball, but there was no TMO. And I was like, oh, shit, man. Like, and so for a dude like that, it's difficult. Like if players, they don't love the game as much, but that's
ownership of it.
That's players these days, you know. Like, you get some old coaches who seem like they hate players because the players aren't the players that they played with.
Yeah,
but that's just because generations change. And
fascinating guy.
But Rassie is unbelievable. He was a level changer in terms of, like, he'd walk into a room, and in South Africa they said, like, it goes like the Prime Minister, the Minister for Sport, and the Springbok head coach. That's the order of Phil in terms of the most important people in the country.
Wow.
And Rassie would be there, like, chatting to underage coaches, and then he'd level shift and be up, like, dealing with the Prime Minister, working on something politically to help, like, the Sevens team, and then he'd just level shift again. He's an unbelievable man.
There you go.
Be an interesting guy to chat to.
Yeah. And he brought the beer back into Munster as well.
Because we were
so paranoid about that we weren't being professional enough, and that, you know, we weren't reaching the standards, that we were like, no drinking, no drinking. And Rassie came in and said, like, we'll have beer in the dressing room when we win a game, we'll have a beer. If we lose a game, we'll have a beer. And then it was just made it normal again. Players loved it.
Yeah, Nakamura lost it.
Brought back the beer. You mentioned Australia. Fiji. I went with Fiji, actually, in the match point.
Did you?
Predictor. And at half time, I was looking quite good for that, actually. If you're not in the House of Rugby League, do get involved, download the app, and come play in the league. I'm sort of paddling about quite low on the table at the moment.
Well, I think, like, what you'd say about them to come back from where they were, and the first 20 that Fiji had, first half really, that Fiji had, then for them to sort of get back into control, went back to set piece, took away their strengths. Two drive over tries. Give them credit, because in the first half you think this Fiji team looks like a world beaters. And then Yate went off and he was unbelievable for however long he was on for. I can't remember how long it was, but he was amazing. What is wrong with my voice?
Sounds really good.
Johnny Cash. Yeah. I thought for them it was a great result and showed they have something about them. But still, we'll see. Jury's still out. I think the jury's still out on pretty much everyone, apart from sort of, you know, where New Zealand and South Africa are. Obviously, we'll say South Africa can do better. But everyone else is sort of, we haven't had those big clashes yet, have we?
No.
Fiji, like, just phenomenal, man. The
unplayable.
The physicality, like Bhutia, the 12/6.
Yeah.
That guy's an animal, man. Yeah. He was, like, just killing people. And Radrada just coming in. Radrada played for Toulon against us at Munster. And I remember a few months back, one of my missus's friends was like, she's an Aussie, and her husband, but they were flying around Europe and they stayed with us. And he was there to me, have you got Toulon in your group this year? I said, yeah. He goes, you got to see this guy, Radrada. And I was like, okay. And he showed me some clips and I said, shit, no. And then, like, he wasn't particularly phenomenal against us that day. He just didn't get an opportunity. But I thought he was incredible, man. He was just sitting people down.
That's the thing with them, is if they just had discipline. They gave away so many stupid penalties, and then they got angry with the ref.
Yeah.
Then the 50-50s that were actual, they always lost because they'd given away so many dull ones where they just played the ball on the wrong side, played the nine, things that they just didn't need to do. They didn't need to do it. Yes, they were doing such a good job of putting pressure on the breakdown, but then they just gave away so many dull ones. Then the referee's like, well, if you're giving away that many dull ones, I'm going to ping you on the 50-50s.
Yeah.
Whether you like it or not, referees, if you're giving away a lot of penalties, which they did, I think they gave away 16, then he's going to side with the other side on 50-50s.
Yeah,
and it killed them, because then they got frustrated and they gave away more. Yeah, they were unlucky with that, with Reece Hodge not getting carded.
But, unlucky?
Well, they were unlucky because he should have been.
Yeah. So, I mean, it leads on to the refereeing, actually. I don't know about you. I don't know if you do a bit of social media. You do a little bit. I'm finding the Twitter thing utterly exhausting at the moment. It's sort of slightly killing the enjoyment, because you're watching some amazing rugby and an amazing... Yeah, of course there are going to be errors, but it's just... Jesus, the debrief afterwards is just painful to wade through. Having said that, I mean, interesting that World Rugby came out and said we've been really frustrated by the lack of consistency from our refereeing panel. Is this just where the game is right now? I mean, we seem to talk about referees off the back of every single game, but Jesus.
But it's
Christ,
whether it's the other way around, is that we've talked about that this World Cup's going to be decided on a referee decision, and it's now looking like they're mitigating everything down so they don't have to make that decision. So, you know, when Sam Warburton got that red card and everyone's going, look, you've got to mitigate that down, it was this, it was that. And they didn't do that. Whereas now, no one wants to be that referee that does that and then maybe ruins someone's chances. I don't know. But there definitely should have been a red card this morning.
Yeah, in the second Samoa.
One. Yeah, it's funny. Some people said the first one, but the second one, he went to absolutely smash him and didn't change his level whatsoever. Yes, the guy was slightly bent, but he was going to maim.
Yeah.
Whereas the first one was like, it was more of a, he was catching it and dropping down, and he did shift his body height, but
a bit like the Anthony Watson one in the England Tonga games. What do you make of? Do you sympathise with referees? Are they getting it wrong and should be held up? And
I think it's an incredibly, incredibly difficult job. Think of it like rugby is a complicated game and there's so many things happening at any one time. The odd time when I was coaching at Munster, I would have to step in and try and ref the session and I would be the shittest ref ever. I would just be getting wiped out by players. I was getting in their way all the time. And then when we get like Johnny Lacey or Joy Neville or Andrew Brace would come in and they used to practice with us.
Yeah.
And I turned around and said, I'm so glad you're here because is this such a difficult job? And you look what happened at the Under-20 Rugby World Cup last year, just gone, where they put this emphasis on, you know, contact with the head and there was like red cards, yellow cards everywhere. The referees are going out and they, whatever the directive comes down to them, they've got to be red hot on that.
Yeah.
And then they probably miss a load of other stuff, but they're human, you know what I mean? Unless you're going to create some sort of robots, I don't know how you.
You can't put it all on that one man in the middle. Like ARs.
Rhys Hodge incident, would you like to have seen the TMO review that? Having sat in many a television truck, they tend to have the game. They have two cameras. They have the live one, and then they have it on a 30-second delay, so they can flick. They see something, they can then watch it immediately off the back of it. Is that the incident where a TMO should come in and say, you need to have a look at this? Or is that...
The dynamic changes because what you would have thought previously, like if you're 45 years of age, what you would have thought from when you were 10 to when you were 44 is okay. Suddenly, like that is now not okay.
Yeah.
So that's difficult. Like when you watch Rhys Hodge there, I don't think Rhys Hodge is a good incident. I'm going to shoot this guy in the head.
Yeah.
He's actually running. I think he's overshot Yatto slightly and he turns. He actually loses the collision as well. Yeah. It looks like, oh, I've just got boshed.
That's what I said to him. I said, you watch that in full speed. You're going, oh my God, poor Rhys Hodge.
Yeah.
So you're not thinking, oh, he didn't try and wrap his arm. You're just thinking he's been absolutely mowed down. You don't actually register that it was anywhere near his head, really. You just think he's been sort of recoiled off by magnet or something because he just gets flown that way. And you don't really see Yatto show any signs that he's been hit in the head, do you, when the collision happens? It's just afterwards.
I mean, apparently, I can't remember who the player was, but one of the Fiji players asked for it to be reviewed. I don't know what the end game is. We're now getting into the territory.
The process should be that if the referee has missed it on there and that player's down, the TMO should look at it in slow-mo, and if he's 100% sure there's like a collision with the head and it needs a review, then he should force that to have a look. You have to have a look at this. Mm. You can't then blame the referee. The referee sees it at full speed. He sees Rhys Hodge fly off and you have to go forward. He's not thinking, because normally if you see a collision to the head, you're dominating the contact generally and you will see the head go back. He doesn't see any of those triggers that are going to make him go, I need to look at that again. I need to question mark. He just sees a guy flying off. He's probably going, I wonder if he's all right. And then the guy goes, they win the ball and they're
playing around him.
Yeah, and they play on. And it's like with the offsides, and there are so many offsides now because everyone plays such a rush defence.
Yeah.
A jump, there's loads of offsides. Now, that should be, again, the more working together, touches should be picking that up, the offside. Or if they're not, and the TMO is seeing it, he should be right, lads. I've seen two or three now offsides. Keep your eye on it. They are straying offside. And asking them to keep an eye on it. But not stopping the game, not influence. But just going, lads, there's quite a few offsides here.
What are we saying? Give the refs a break?
Man in the middle, just don't pick on the one guy because it's not just him.
It's a team.
Yeah.
Is that fair?
It's got to be the team. You've got to the TMO along with the ARs working with him. They've got to prioritise what is the most... If player safety is the most important thing, well, that's what they've got to be out and they've got to be red hot on. If you took anyone that's complaining about referees and asked them to go out and do that job...
Yeah.
You know, it's like anything.
The people that are out there...
The man in the arena.
Yeah, the people that are out there are probably the best at it and they're missing it, so it's that difficult.
Just a nod to Wayne Barnes and Paul Williams.
Yeah.
Barner. The world's best.
Yeah.
Nigel.
Sure. I think he's a better referee of the law than Nigel. Nigel just comes out with great sayings that everyone clips up, doesn't he?
Yeah, that's the difference, is that when we coached and Nigel was reffing, and he's an awesome ref, But you don't know, if we've had six refs in a row and then we get Nigel, we're going to get something different. Now, it's going to be really good for the game, but he may not be applying the same directives that the rest of the lads, but he let the game flow. But you've got to really quickly...
Players, you've got to get into your players and say, you've got to sort most of it out, because he's probably not going to help you. He's going to let things flow.
That's it. You got to figure out, okay, he's not going to give us scrum penalties today. Okay, so let's just get the ball all in out. And out, because there's no point in trying to win a scrum penalty here, because he's not going to do it. But you're giving autonomy to one guy, but I don't think it works in a professional game when people are trying to pay the bills.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. Would
you ever advocate two referees? It's been trialed before. I think they do a lot of these tests in South African university rugby, don't they? Would you be a fan of that?
I just think when you've got three of pretty much out there, you shouldn't need another on field ref.
And the guy above.
One for another day. Very interesting. Quick final question. Wales, Ireland, England, Scotland. Who's going furthest in the tournament?
Not Scotland.
Wales, England, Ireland. Who's going furthest in the tournament at this point?
On the one performance.
Yep.
On the one performance, you'd probably have to say Ireland. See, that's why I'm balanced.
Can we frame really? That? Can we frame that and have it signed?
That is why I'm balanced, Jerry.
I'd almost kick it back and say...
There's so much love on the show.
I struggle to see the momentum winners in Wales. I'm not sure who their Billy V is going to be.
Yeah.
And I understand that. I thought England were poor against Tonga. But when you see an Eddie Jones coach side, they normally play with massive tempo. Mm. And there's like, that's why I love Tom Curry. I love Sam Underhill, because it's like they haven't been really touched by another coach. They're just Eddie Jones's
raw.
They're in
project.
in his mold. And I felt that it was just sloppy against Tonga. But I still think, I don't know how teams are going to deal with Tuilagi and Billy Vunipola.
And Mako when he gets...
Mako comes back against the US as well.
Well, it's 10 changes, isn't it?
Yeah.
I just think...
Do you like the team that's been picked for the USA? Understand it? Get it?
Yeah.
Do you play Billy again?
Well, I just believe that they are so concerned that Billy plays better when he doesn't have breaks. I think that's just generally it. They're like, he plays better when he's fit and he's constantly in there. It's a risk.
He'll have 40 minutes, hopefully.
We need him, yeah. But I think it's right. I think it's a game where they can change it, and they're not going to have much chance to rest anyone after this, so they needed to do it in this game. So I think it's the right approach to do. I just think in that first game, they seem to worry about Tonga too much. They need to just concentrate doing what they do well.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter doesn't matter who you play against. It feels like they were like, okay, if we're going into this, we're going to not give them anyone to hit for the first 20 minutes. It's like, well, New Zealand scored 60 points in the first half against them. Just go do that. Yeah. Focus on what you're doing and go do that. So I just think they probably got that approach a little bit wrong, but I'm pretty sure they won't make that mistake again.
I have a question. What is the English first choice back three? With Jack Noel coming into the mix. Yeah.
Johnny, Anthony Watson and Jack Noel. If everyone's fit.
Who's
and
at
healthy.
15? Anthony.
Anthony Watson, yeah.
So Elliot Daly doesn't make the cut.
I don't think he's... I prefer him as a 13. I know that Eddie wants him in the team, but I just don't think... One-on-one, he gets the job done. And in a World Cup final, you need someone who's not going to miss tackles at fullback.
Okay.
That's saying he gets to the World Cup final.
Positively. Hashtag English arrogance. Yeah. I love it. There's one for you, Clegg. You can come clambering aboard on that. Time for this week's Guinness Perfect Pour. Our weekly test in 119 and a half seconds, because that's how long it takes to pour the perfect pint. Last week, Jerry, we had Tins and Hask FaceTiming the most famous person in their phone. This week... Given that they have done it already, it's your... No, it's not. Who is the most famous person in your phone?
That's a good question. I don't know. I think, Dougal from Father Ted.
Yes.
Yes.
That's a great shout. I think you'd have won with that.
I'm not sure if he likes me, man, because I was... I think I had a few drinks and I was at some sort of charity dinner on, and I just kept coming up to him.
Did you give him the full nose treatment?
Yeah, but
quoting lines at him.
No, but on a different level. I kept going up to him, and he would be chatting to. I think there was something to do with AIB Bank. They're an Irish bank, and they're based in London. And we'd flown over, and we had the European Cup. We'd won it, and we're like, "Oh, aren't we great?" And I'd had a few drinks, and every time I saw him, I kept going, "I don't believe it!" And he was looking at me like, "Oh, come on,
he's
man!"
He's going, "Do you know? I hear this all the time. I did not expect it from you, Joe." From
yeah, exactly. We should do that another time. I love the fact that Hask has eaten David Brent, and you're a Father Ted fan. Mm. What is your sitcom of choice? The Royal Family.
The Crown.
The Crown.
Watch out. Series 35.
Who is playing Jason, you in the crowd? Is Jason Statham playing you in Series 5 of the crowd?
I've agreed it.
Have you really?
Yeah.
I can't wait to see that.
He's got put on a bit of timber, mind.
Your voice has gone quite into that.
Yeah, well, at least I've got a bit more ripped anyway.
That role. So, you can either pick a team made up of the best Tier 2 players.
I didn't get an option.
I didn't get an option either.
Or you could do best of the Pacific Islands so far. Do you want to do Tier 2?
Tier 2.
Oh, he's gone and done some research. Have you done some research as well? Amazing. God, it's nice having people who come with some preparation. Right, you can debate between the two of you and then...
I'm lacking a second row.
Right, Jerry, lead us off. Your loose head is...
I was tempted to go with the Georgians because their scrum has been so good, but I went with Logavi Mulipola.
Yeah.
From Newcastle.
Yes.
Just for a ball carry.
Longavi Mulipola. Like him.
At hooker, I went with Shalva Mamukashvili.
Yep.
Because I had to do him at the weekend when he scored a try. I was like, this practicing Mamukashvili.
Very good on the scrabble board.
I did see out of their whole 23, names only end in Villies, Zeddies, or Vaz.
Is that right?
Every member, there's a lot of Villies in there.
A lot of Villies.
Hey! 23.
See what you've done there.
Brilliant.
Tight head is Livan Chilichava. He's played with Toulon. Thought he played well when he came on. Scrum, won a scrum penalty, scored a try. I'm going to go for my front lock. It's going to be Mamuka Gorgadze.
Yeah. Did you ever play against him? He has been around since time began. I mean, he is...
I don't know. He says he's 35.
He looks like a supersized John Belushi. Do you know what I mean? From
I do. Yeah.
Blues Brothers.
My five lock, Leone Nakarawa. At six, I've gone for... We played cast a few times when I was coaching Munster, and this guy, the number eight, I'm sorry if I get this wrong, but Maama Vaipulu.
Yep.
Really, really powerful, quick off the base. He's going to play six. Michele Yatto is a shoe-in at seven.
What a player he is.
Bill Matta at eight.
Yep.
This is unbelievable.
It's a proper team this already, isn't it?
At nine, he didn't make the starting 15 for Fiji. I've leaned heavily on Fiji here.
Yeah.
But I've gone with Nico Matawalo just because I'm not going to play structured rugby. I want to just throw it around.
Yeah, I like what
he did. Ben Volavola at 10. Semi Radrada. Levani Bhatia at 12, Reynal Lilo at 13. He caught us up a few times with Cardiff.
He plays the Blues, doesn't he?
Yeah. Joshua Tuasova.
Legs like tree trunks.
Animal. And then, I'm not sure if I can pick him, but Nemanja Nadolo.
You'll bring him out of retirement.
At 15. I had Ganava here, but he's 37.
And he got smoked.
Yeah. Ganava, he played for Leicester against us one of my first years when I was coaching with Munster, and honestly he's
incredible.
He stepped nine players I think in one go, and I was just incredible.
Here comes the hot stepper.
How fast did Corrovetti look when he gassed him there?
Yeah,
wowzers,
proper quick.
By the way,
that is a very good team, and I would pay good money to come and watch that.
You just got to pick me a second row as I go through this because I'm struggling on my second one. I have, apologies, my props are probably the wrong way, so I have Mulipola.
Yeah.
Then I have Nariashvili.
Nariashvili.
Then I went on people's performances of the first week.
Oh, this guy's a warrior,
man. So
I
went Torsten van der Jarveld from Namibia.
Namibia.
Great
shot.
Ex-cheaters, quality.
Because I thought he played really well and did some good stuff. I've got Nakarawa as one second row. Can you pick me another one?
Yeah, I'll come back to it.
Okay. I went TJ Ioni at six.
Yeah.
I went Yatto at seven. I went Gorgadza at eight.
Yeah. Pulling him out of the second row, sticking him into the...
No. Gorgadza, not Gorgodza.
Oh, right. Sorry, apologies.
Tricky when they all end in ZD.
Yes.
And then I've got Damian Stevens from Namibia at nine. Scored a great try.
A lot of love.
Great support lines. Did some really good work in defence. I got Ben Volavola.
Yeah.
At 10. Radradra.
Randrandra.
At 11.
This guy's quality, man.
Yeah,
I can't pronounce his name.
Niasavilu.
Niasavilu.
Yeah, him.
Why say Niasavilu?
And then I've got the Bhatia in the centre with him. Then I have Namibia did actually. And then I've got Plateau from Namibia on the wing. Scored that great try. Powerful running through. Little fella stepped off the wing, beat the fullback.
Yeah.
And then I've got Nanai Williams at fullback.
Yeah.
And that was from my performances.
Nanai, how much went through him today?
He played really well this morning.
Have you got a second row?
No.
You left Bill Matta
Scott, but that was...
Bill Matta is like the standout player in the Pro 14 last year.
But I'm going on Pro 14. I'm going on what I've seen over the weekend.
No. What was it? The question I thought was
made up from
two
tier
teams.
Two nations. Yeah,
yeah. It didn't say the World Cup. I decided. Yeah, to pick I from the games.
You've rewritten. Oh, okay. He's done the old exam question. I don't know the. I don't know the answer to the question you've given me, so I'm going to write myself a different answer to a different question.
No, so I went from what I've seen in the World Cup so far.
Okay, you make up your own questions.
Hence why
my team would beat the piss out of that team. Would beat
That's
the
very
piss
true.
Out of them, man.
How much recruitment will be being done right now? Do you think at the World Cup? Do a lot of these players think it won't go well?
I think definitely some tier two who aren't, because obviously a lot of them came back to Namibia because I picked three of them. They play in Development 15, don't they? That do play in the Currie Cup or whatever.
Yeah.
Mm. So yeah, they'll definitely get picked up because they'll be a bargain, won't they?
Yeah.
If you can string together four good games in your group games, then you're definitely looking at it.
Hopefully, where dreams are made.
But it doesn't suit the Irish system.
Yeah,
because the Irish system, we've got to approve players if they're coming in that aren't Irish qualified.
It suits
but
France.
if you're French and you're sitting there, you're going, like that guy Torsten Manjarsfield, that hooker, he's quality man. He played for the Cheetahs against us for a couple of years. Thought he was really really good, but you can pick up some of the South African players, like they're relatively so inexpensive.
Yeah,
in comparison, and there are some of them they're just so good. So
it's the same with all the Pacific Islanders. I mean, they've got a lot over there in France anyway. But if you have a storming World Cup, you'll get picked up and taken over.
Like Nandolo, who then is told he can't go to the World Cup. That's for another day, I think. chaps, thank you very much indeed. Really enjoyed that.
You must have got heavy your rugby. Full rugby nose on today,
full
didn't you?
Fix this week.
You
yeah,
can't leave I feel at least my, 10 minutes on the table because you've got a full, full excitement.
Carried
in
out
pants,
in my
don't you?
Sedan chair.
Lay down and smoke a cigarette.
Now. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
He's done.
I feel fully satisfied. Oh, so and good. I have to say, the show doesn't often do that, but hopefully, for the other noses out there, you've got what you came for. If that's fair enough. That is it for this week. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. Thank you for enjoying House of Rugby, dedicated this week to Clegg Smegson. Come and see us soon. Don't forget, you can take us on here at House of Rugby via the Guinness Pint Predictor. We mentioned it a little bit earlier on. Download the Match Pint app. Come and play in our league with the code House. It couldn't be easier. What, you haven't got involved yet, have you?
I know, I didn't.
I've raced out of the traps. I'm doing all right in the house. There's a Guinness Legends League, which I certainly don't belong in, but I'm struggling a bit. And that Flats is having an absolute barnstormer.
Is he?
Jim Hamilton is miles behind everybody else. You need to get involved in that, actually.
I deleted the app. So
right, don't delete the app. Reinstall the app. Come and play with us in the House of Rugby League, use the code HOUSE. You can also download and watch our boxing show, TK with Carl Frampton, and Liquid Football with Kelly Cates, wherever you get your podcasts. And of course, both of those available on YouTube. Thank you, Tins. Thank you, Jerry. Safe journey back. See you again soon. Oh, by the way, one other thing, very quickly. All the details about our Japan trip are going to be on the Facebook page very soon. So if you're not on that, do get involved. We're going to have a lot of fun out there. See you soon. Have a good week. Thank you for watching and listening.
You've been listening to the House of Rugby on Joe. Together. With Guinness. Drink responsibly. Visit drinkaware.co.uk for the facts.